The home service industry is recession-proof.
There's more capital chasing contractors than ever before.
We all sell, friends. It's death, divorce, or debt. So pick your 3 Ds.
How marketing, technology, and systems directly affect valuation.
And if people don't adapt and understand that, then they're going to be left behind.
This episode will completely change how you look at your own business.
Content is king, consistency is queen, and attention is everything.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Private equity is pouring money into home services, but most contractors will never be able to sell their business. That's the uncomfortable truth. Today's guest is Steven Martinez, founder of the American Dream Event, one of the few events in this industry built specifically to help contractors scale and prepare for a real exit. If you look at roofing alone, 7 of the top 10 companies are now backed by private equity. There's more capital chasing contractors than ever before, yet most businesses are completely unsellable. In this episode, we break down why. Steven explains the number one reason private equity disqualifies most contractors, what PE is actually buying and what they don't care about, the revenue and EBITDA ranges that start getting real attention, why building a company with the intention to sell often creates a better business, how marketing, technology, and systems directly affect valuation, and why owner-only rooms and PE-focused events accelerate growth, even if you never plan to sell. We also dive deep into how Steven is building his own roofing company from day one with an exit in mind, why home services are recession-resistant, and what minority and immigrant contractors often underestimate about their competitive advantage. If you're a contractor doing 3 to 10 million, thinking about scale, or just trying to build something that's actually valuable, not just busy, this episode will completely change how you look at your own business. Let's get into it. What's up, everyone? This is Mauricio Cardona. I'm the host of the AI Marketing Show for home service contractors. Welcome to the show, Steven Martinez. How are you, Steven?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk to you. I had a great conversation last time. And I just wanted to know more about you and your event, and we'll get into all that stuff in a second.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You want to touch base on the American Dream first?
We'll touch base in a second. I wanted to get into actually private equity, because I know that's what the event is about, really. And really, it's a big topic of conversation with a lot of home service companies. It's if you look at the top 100 roofing companies, 7 of the top 10 roofing companies are backed by private equity today. So it's been a big shift in that world. So, you know, there's a lot of private equity money chasing contractors today. Why do you think so many companies are not really sellable?
Well, that's a good question. There's a lot of factors. So my good friend Brian Franco owns Meritage Partners. It's one of the biggest mergers and acquisitions firms in the nation. They focus on different ventures because private equity looks at different, you know, industries overall. Specifically the roofing industry, though, I'd say, I mean, there's basic things such as systems, right? Systems, operations, procedures could be one. Having a foundation set, is your concept replicatable? Is it scalable? You know, can you copy and paste it to a different market? Or even if you're going to branch under a specific wing, right, under the umbrella for a bigger company, how do you operate everything internally? So there's a lot of factors, right? You know, it could be anything from your brand, your content, your systems, your sales, what competitive advantage you're providing in the market specifically. You know, is it high risk, low risk? Are you doing residential, commercial? Is it insurance, retail? So many variables there that come into play. So it really comes to really nitpicking and understanding your ideal private equity investor, because private equity investors look at different types of things. So one can say, I want a company that's only insurance, and you might be just doing only, so that's not really necessarily your guy, but then maybe it's another group of investors are saying, no, we want a retail-based company that's been doing it for 4 or 5 years consistently at a 15% EBITDA, at a, let's say, you know, 2.5 million EBITDA with a, maybe you can get a 7-8 multiplier, do the math. So it really depends on that. Hopefully that kind of answers your question a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think, what's the main reason that kind of disqualifies a lot of companies from being sellable? From PE interest, what's the main factor that you've seen?
Well, from what I've seen and what I've heard directly from the sources themselves is honestly a lack of transparency when it comes to the numbers. You know, people will say, I'm doing $4 million EBITDA, margins are 35% high, and it all sounds good verbally, but then when they actually dissect you, which they will dissect you, and you know they're going through everything and they're auditing you and they're doing their due diligence process, right, that's when they start to see the real numbers, right? You know, you might say you're doing that on paper, but then you have credit due with your suppliers, right? Like you have $200,000 worth of credit due for it to ABC or QXO or whatever. You know, maybe your systems, maybe you have overhead, maybe you did a credit line that people don't know about. So they really look at everything. For me, what an investor looks for, obviously, is profitability, and it's scalable. If it is profitable and the numbers are there, then it's worth investing. So now they say, okay, this is a pretty constant variable that we could put money in, that we can get money out. Now, what can we do aside from putting money to amplify it, right? Like a rocket, putting boosters to the rocket to make it bigger and better. Well, we can expand on the marketing resources. We can merge them under a different umbrella, X and Y. But I think it would be a lack of transparency, to be honest. I think people, you know, they might say they're doing something, but in reality, they're not. And then if you were to say, okay, aside from, you know, the numbers, which is obviously the most important thing, I'd say their systems in place. I think that's very important to reverse engineer your business at the beginning to have an exit plan. Because we all sell, whether it's death, divorce, or debt. So pick your three Ds. So if you have an exit plan specifically ready to sell, especially in a recession-proof industry, I think you're more likely to actually sell.
So death, divorce, or what was the third one?
Death, divorce, and debt.
That's the three main ones. And I think that's, I actually had Brian Frankel a couple months ago on the podcast. And he mentioned something similar to that.
True though, it's very, very true.
Yeah. What's the biggest misconception that contractors have about private equity is actually buying?
Like when you say misconception, as in like a contractor being afraid of private equity, what are they afraid of?
Yeah.
I guess it's the fact that whenever you think of private equity, you think of like this like euphoric, like, you know, mystic creature in the forest sometimes, right? But in reality, they're just people. They're just well business owners that, I mean, it's like anything, right? If you want to invest in a stock, if you want to invest in real estate, if you want to invest in different areas, a lot of people, one of the things actually that the best thing you can do is invest in yourself, of course. But then number two would be invest in another business, right? If the business is running for 3 to 5 years, the profit margins are good, they're increasing sustainably. You know, it's in the retail market, for example, where insurance fluctuates based on weather factors, unless if you're up north. But let's say you're doing retail, your consistent margins, you're building up, you're getting a lot of data, a lot of clients. It reduces the risk factors, and that's what they like to see. So for them, it's all based on high risk, low risk. If you're doing commercial and one of your clients is 60% of your revenue, it's a big high risk for them. So that's a no, because if you lose this guy, then it's a gamble. So it's really understanding the market and how you can create a very sustainable foundation to be attractive to the buyer.
Yeah. And this is a different question to the answer. What I mean is, like, what do you think, like, this is, I guess, different for different owner, right? What revenue does EBITDA level do the private equity look at? Like, what level do they start looking at is the actual sellable business they want to buy?
So I've heard that if you want to do your first year in business, you want to at least, so the perfect candidate, you want to sell in 3 years. Let's just say, like, hypothetically speaking, right? Your first year, you want to do at least $2.5 million revenue. If you're doing, let's say 30-35%, maybe you're at around 500-600. By year two, you're able to go to 5-6. Year three, you're able to go to 7-8. If you're able to hit anything, I would say above a 1.5 to a 2.5 within those first 3 years. But again, being in a sustainable market that, you know, it's not like you just got hit with a hailstorm this year and then you were just 10 million. Like, yeah, but can you maintain that 10 million for 3 to 4 years? Obviously, the EBITDA is important, but then also the EBITDA and the multiplier changes based on factors. If you have a unique system, so I'll tie in iSmart Roofing. We do a lot of AI virtual roofing, so our system is very scalable. So if you have a unique system that's a competitive advantage within the market that eliminates, you know, some overhead or door-to-door, or you're able to allocate more resources a different way, that puts you more on a pedestal, right, for the client, because they say, okay, yeah, they're not just your typical roofing company, they actually have something different. Having said that, that changes the multiplier. So the multiplier obviously ranges on so many various factors, but usually you're looking at around a 7-8 multiplier. So if you're doing 2.5 EBITDA at an 8 multiplier, I mean, you're already over $16 million right there on the buyout. But then obviously there's clauses and terms and all that stuff whenever you exit, but that's what you're looking
for. So let's talk about iSmart Roofing, because we talked about last time. It's a new business you just started. And the first thing you did, you said, is your attention is itself from day one. So how does that affect your decisions early on?
I think if anything, it makes it better. It's like, I was telling Sam actually this with Amstel Roofing. They sold to private equity last year, one of the biggest companies in Houston. And for me is, if you prepare with an exit already in mind, and you know what they're looking for, you know what you have to do, you know the numbers, you know the due diligence process for the most part, then you're setting yourself up for success compared to someone who hasn't even done any research or anything. They're just kind of just going with the flow. Having said that, if you're able to do that, kind of like, you know, aim for the stars, land on the moon, you're bound to get somewhere eventually. And with the American Dream event, we host one of the biggest events for home service contractors, roofers. I have friends of mine that sold to private equity in different areas, garage, HVAC, roofing, construction. And we have vendors and partners like ABC, QXO, all these big, big partners. So the American Dream was the first venture of mine. And I started to see, what's the common denominator here that everyone who's successful at sold their business is using? Oh, they're using a CRM system. Oh, they're doing this way. Oh, this is how they're doing their sales, their processes, their marketing, X, Y, and Z. As I started to kind of get all those connections and understand the reverse engineering everything instead of starting from zero, I was like, okay, now it's time to start the roofing company here in Houston. Yes, Houston is very competitive, but at the same time, if you implement the right systems and you set the brand the right way, you're going to ultimately set yourself up for success. Obviously, easier said than done. It's not, you're not going to be flying off the first month, but if you do things the right way and you set a foundation, you're going to set yourself up for success. So the iSmart Roofing venture got tied into private equity because of the event, because of what we've seen.
That's awesome. Awesome. And let's talk about the event. What made you start the event?
Oh, man, we got to go back. I met my first mentor during 2020, and COVID hit, of course. So I was playing soccer overseas, got my degree in business, came back to Houston, was doing my MBA, my master's online, and it was my buddy's birthday. Met my mentor. Turned out he actually owned Win the Storm and owned SVG, which is an online training platform. He ended up selling it to Josie Parks. During those first 45 days, I was Hurricane Laura, Sally, Delta, and Charlie, so we went to Lake Charles. Went back to Arizona, learned the whole game of the industry, insurance claim process, all that good stuff. So I didn't know what a shingle was. I didn't know anything about the industry. I didn't know there was money in the industry. But obviously, I was seeing it. I was like, man, these guys are making millions of dollars from a roof. Like, that's crazy. So I took that in mind. And as I was going to these events, I started to see, you know, all these events are great. Like, you have Roof Call, Win the Storm. Oh, they're good events. But I wouldn't see Latinos, surprisingly. I was like, this is interesting. There's thousands of people. When I think of home service, the predominant market is Latino-based, right? So let me create a concept, make it better, and apply it to a different market. That was our first kind of concept with the American Dream almost 4 years ago. We got involved with Telemundo. Obviously, easier said than done, but a lot of hustling, networking, talking to vendors, people that believed in the mission behind us. And the idea was to provide a market financial literacy so that they could level the playing field and build their version of the American Dream. And as we started to grow and grow and grow, we started to get Latinos, African Americans, I mean, all sorts of people from demographics. And I was like, well, like, now it's really becoming the American Dream because it's people from everywhere. So that was the original mission for us, for Latinos. But as we started to grow and grow, we started to get everyone.
I believe that 90% of the labor force is in the home services industry. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is from a Latin descent, right? Is that accurate or?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, maybe 80-90%. And obviously the labor force is mostly, you know, Hispanic, Latin, you know, whatever you want to say. And it's funny because a lot of I kind of had the same experience when I worked in the space. I saw that many of the owners were different demographics, but most of the labor force was actually Latino, and that's because of immigration or whatever, you know, a lot of different reasons. But yeah, it's very interesting. And now you're saying that the idea really is changed, right? Like the whole mission of the conference has changed. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, yeah. So like the first mission coming from parents that are immigrants, well, they came here like legally, but they're from Colombia, right? So they immigrated here. And for them, you know, they come here, everyone comes here for the American Dream, better life, all that good stuff. So as we created the event, for me, it was targeting a lot of the Latinos. Like, as we mentioned, we had the 80 to 90% labor force, or people that just, you know, contractors are just, you know, maybe his dad knows it, but he wants to give it to his son. But his son, you know, he's a little more fluent in the language and he wants to understand the business kind of game, but he hasn't had the opportunity to really learn. So it was more, how can we provide the community this concept and opportunity to learn? And as we started to get a lot of Latinos, we started to get people, you know, coming in, because we had so many amazing speakers. We had Tommy Mello, Rene Rodriguez, Carlos Reyes. Tommy Mello sold Avon Garage for like $150 million. So obviously that's going to attract a lot of people, not just Latinos. So as we started to build it and, you know, get our audience, people started to come. And what started as a simple thing just to help the community for Latinos ended up coming to help, obviously, all Americans, anyone coming here to learn the game, really. So the one that we did in 2025, we had Mario Lopez, which is our first time having a celebrity, which was pretty cool. Michael Gerber, Kurt Lennington with Linear Roofing, he also sold to private equity. Kaiser, one, a good friend of mine, he also sold to private equity as well. And for 2026, we have a pretty cool lineup. So super excited to announce that soon.
What made you shift the focus to the private equity? Like, hey, let's start getting these people to understand the importance of private equity and understand what they need to do to actually become a sellable business.
So what really caught my interest was actually when I first got introduced to the industry during 2020. Because during 2020, as we know, COVID was going on and the world was on pause. So a lot of private equity was losing money in all their different ventures, you know, real estate, X, Y, and Z. However, the home service industry is recession-proof, which a lot of people didn't really pay attention to until COVID happened. And then that's when people were starting to see, wow, there's so much money in the home service space in general. But now let's actually invest in the home service space. So for me, it's kind of like common sense or a light bulb moment, as well, you could say. If, you know, the world is on pause, the economy is going down, but then the home service is going up, obviously, clearly, there's a lot of potential in this market. So why not focus in this area where it's recession-proof? I mean, that means no matter how the economy is doing, it's going to be stable for the most part. And that's really caught my interest. And then I wanted to say, well, like, why do they? Like, what are they looking at exactly? Like, yeah, I understand, you know, there's factors. It could be, you know, weather, insurance, retail, whatever. But, like, why is it? And it's because the numbers, it's great. There's great margins in it if you do it right, of course.
You mentioned the importance of systems and technology. What systems are you setting up in your own company to prepare for the eventual exit?
Yeah, for sure. So we actually, I just got back, well, it was like a few weeks ago before the break, before Christmas, I went to GIF headquarters and I met with the new CEO who just got appointed for this year. And we were on the, like, speaking on the roofing side for contractors. And it was a lot of conversations on AI. So with the things that we do, I mean, but then keep in mind though, every market's different, everyone's different. For us internally, what we do, and our call to action is essentially the only time you see us is when the job starts. So from start to finish, it's almost all virtual. That, you know, we have our way of running our ads, our content, our A/B testing. We get the leads. We have our cold callers/sellers. They come in. They get the clients. We send them the good, better, best. We use AI to actually give them an instant measurement. There's a lot of AI tools now. We use Demand IQ. I know there's a few out there like Roofful, stuff like that, where you just plug in the information for the client and you get an instant quote. We give them their option. We zap that into Job Nimbus, our CRM, and then we send them a formal estimate that looks professional. That's also integrated with Sumo Quote. Once they see it, they sign it, and then we'll obviously send them the payment methods for however they want to pay to get the job started. And then our production guys schedule everything, and then that's how we get it done pretty much. So we made everything as virtual as possible. And we eliminate door knocking as well, because our concept is, like, for me, you know, if I do Uber Eats, I say just leave it, like, don't ring the doorbell, just leave it at the front, or Amazon. So it's like you can do the same concept with roofing, with home services, with anything, right? So how can we get that switch to make it more and more techie?
Got it. You're kind of Amazoning your company, your home service company, right? That's you're making it more like e-com, like more like Amazon.
Yeah, it really is like that. We have our guys close virtually all the time, you know, through text, phone, call, all that good stuff. Door-to-door, door-to-door, I would say it is still important. However, you know, there's a big shift going on in general, and technology is obviously a big part of that. So I would think, in my personal opinion, that door-to-door nevertheless will decline eventually more and more and more and more. And virtual will go up and up and up and up. And if people don't adapt and understand that, then they're going to be left behind, unfortunately. Obviously, it's different if there's a hailstorm right now. Then, of course, get my team out. Boom, go knock doors. That's the quickest way. But there's a lot of factors, too. You know, no solicitation. You know, people, gated communities, people don't want to open. If you have a guy who can knock on, let's say, 60 doors, let's say that's a really good number. And let's say maybe 7 answer, 3 say yes, he gets 1 inspection. Maybe he gets one estimate. He wouldn't even know if it's closed or not. Well, through the virtual side, my guys can touch 200 contacts, leads that we get that are already interested, self-lead generation strategies that we have on how to get clients that are interested in roofing services. So it's all a numbers game for anything, right, for sales. So it's how can we get the touches in the door as quick as possible, as fast as possible, while making it as effective and efficient for the client as well, and making it easy for them, which is the most important thing, too.
Do you have, when a lead comes in, do you have like a CSR that turns that lead into an appointment and then sends it to the rep? Is that how it works, or just send it straight to the rep?
Yeah, so our guys, they'll, for example, if they get a fresh lead coming in from one of our ads, I always like to describe them as kind of like a cold caller slash sales guy, because it's almost like a call center, but it's not. But they're just educated on, you know, obviously getting the information, plugging in their address, because as soon as we get their info, we already have their address too. So it's a quick script where they, you know, hey, Mrs. Smith, saw that you're interested, 0% down, or you're interested in financing your roof for $100 a month. We have the address, this is where you're looking at, boom, 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 boom. And then we send that out, and then they get connected with our production guy. So it's almost like a 2-in-1, I would say.
Got it. And then you use Demand IQ for the quote. And typically how accurate is that quote?
It's really good, actually. They're integrated with EagleView and Hailtrace.
So it costs money every time you do that, right? So I'm assuming it costs a little bit of money.
It's actually a subscription base. So you pay for it monthly, and then you can use it as much.
Nice. So EagleView is my, and my understanding is the most accurate one of the satellite measurement tools. That's my understanding. So it's integrated directly with that. That's good. So because this is really interesting to me. So how are you generating leads, and how are you demanding generation? How are you demanding the leads?
So our leads are just all on, obviously we have Google, local service ads. We stay away from pay-per-click just because it's kind of a waste of money, to be honest, in my opinion, at least in Houston. Social media is big as well. You know, we have Facebook, Insta, Meta, all that good stuff. And then we have a way of kind of training our guys with a little, you know, confidential, I guess, if you want to call it that, proprietary, where we show them how to actually find people that are looking for roofs in our market as well. So not only are they getting leads that are coming in hot, but then they're also finding leads that are coming in from different areas, people, you know, searching for.
They're self-generating their own leads as well.
Correct. Yeah, virtually. Correct.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's good. So you're bypassing a lot of the traditional marketing, and you're just doing this full 100% marketing, online marketing. And there's no adjustment, because I haven't seen many. I know in the solar space is pretty big in terms of virtual appointments, virtual inspections, virtual sales. In the roofing, I haven't seen it a lot. How does that work? Is that like you do a Zoom meeting and you actually present like that? How does that work typically?
No, we actually don't. So if they go to our website, for example, we have a call to action video that kind of gives them the whole synopsis of what we do, like super easy process. If, for example, we get the lead, then we get their information through just basic a call or a text or email. Most of the time it's actually text. We're able to just, hey, Mr. Smith, I saw your inquiry regarding you needing a new roof for 123 Apple Street. We're more than happy to get you taken care of. How soon do you need it done? Oh, I'm looking to get it done ASAP, actually. Okay, awesome. You're looking to pay out of pocket or finance or perhaps insurance? Most times in this market for us, it's either paid out of pocket or financing. Okay, awesome, cool. So I'm going to send you over our good, better, best, or better, best, good. These are your options that you're looking for. Just let me know. Each option depends on the warranty, 15 years, 30, 50, et cetera. Okay, yeah, I'm looking for option A. Awesome. So I'm going to send this formal contract with you with all the information, everything itemized, so you can see the full details and scope of what we do. And we obviously get their information, put it on JobNimbus, our CRM, and they're integrated with Sumoco, which has the whole proposal. And then they receive it, they e-sign it, and then we're able to start the job, obviously 50% deposit or however they want to pay, and then we get it going.
And from there, the sale, because a lot of, just the reason why I'm bringing this up, because a lot of most home service organizations, at least in the roofing space, they have the salesperson actually handle not only the sale, but the project. right? So they actually get to the project and they actually collect the money. In this case, you're handing, once the sale is made, the contract is signed, you're handing that straight to the project manager.
Correct, yeah. So once we get that, the project manager projects, that's one of the things I learned from friends, mentors, keep your sales guys selling, like keep the closers closing. Don't put them on there, that's wasting their time. And if, you know, if they're good at closing, let them close. And we don't do the Zoom call stuff, so we'll get them all the information. And then obviously when they see everything, they see how professional we are, they see our website, they see our credibility, they see that we're Google verified, they see that we're preferred contractors, they see how they're certified with GAF, Owens Corning. Obviously, you know, we have our reviews, all that good stuff. Creating the content, as in, you know, the base, the foundation of the brand is very important. And that's something that I think a lot of people sometimes oversee. And I'll give you a basic example. So let's say I have a roofing company and I'm doing really well, right? So there's option A and option B. Same quote, same everything, same years in business, same reviews, everything. Everything's the same. One is called Stevens Roofing Company and one is called Apple Roofing. Apple Roofing subconsciously is gonna gain more trust because of the name, because it's not tied to someone personally. Yeah, they say Stevens Roofing, you're like, I don't know Steven. Who is Steven, right? Now, the only thing to that is if you're in business for 30 years. If you've been in business for 30 years, that's a whole different concept, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about 2025, 2026, new businesses that have been in business for, let's say, five, six years and less. It's a big component, the brand, the name, the website, the credibility. You know, people do their due diligence research subconsciously as they're looking at competitors. That's what they want. And then if they're able to just, okay, yeah. We have people where we still that have said, I've seen you guys before. Like, you guys have been here for like 20 years. I'm like, we're pretty new, man. But again, it's how we tie in the brand. It's tying in the brand helps a lot with the process to make it streamline more, to make it more effective. So if you're even the roofer, one man shop, one man team, horrible website, you know, everything's, you know, I'm texting quotes through the phone. It's not going to work as elegant, as professional, as someone that's already structured. So that's why setting that foundation is important. Obviously, you got to put in money, but that's just the name of the game. You got to pay to play. You have to have a CRM system. You have to build it. We didn't start Isomar Roofing for the first 2 months. We were creating everything. We were setting up the foundation first before we got moving.
Let me ask you, like, because I'm curious about this, really from our information, what are you using for the workflows? I know you said Job Nimbus, but for the CRM, right? But what are you using for the actual, like, initial contact? Is that using Job Nimbus for everything, or like for connecting, calling, texting, sending quotes? What are you using for that?
Collecting all the data that we're getting from the leads. So if the lead comes in from the website, we get it through Demand IQ. And then if they put it through Demand IQ, it zaps into Job Nimbus, so it pops up.
Got it. Okay.
Now, if it's Google, it comes in through the Google method. Now, for our ads that run through social media and all that stuff, they zap in, and we use the Excel, and then we also use Go High Level.
You can build that system through Go High Level, right? I think Go High Level is becoming big now, like in the home services space. A lot of people know about it. It's been around for a little bit of time, but it's one of the big CRMs that is actually. It's gonna get my opinion is gonna go after HubSpot. It's gonna get so big. It's because people are just, it's a really good system. So especially for anything lead intake, and I know a lot of contractors are using Go High Level now, and that's why I was asking, because you can do all that stuff in Go High Level, right? And everything you're talking about, we can build that for you guys, and I'm sure other people can do it as well. So just that's important. That's amazing, man. That is you're basically kind of building a system that is self-sustainable and more tech driven, right, than the average contractor, and a very competitive market. Houston is probably top five competitiveness in the US in terms of like roofing, right? There's like how many, it's unlicensed state, right? There's a lot of junk in the trucks, people. It's difficult. It's not the easiest, place to start a business. Let's talk about we talked about this last time, right? What the three main levers of growing, according to PE, right, for home services is technology, marketing, and acquisitions. Why do you think marketing comes first?
I would say marketing is everything. In my personal opinion, and this comes back to the American Dream event, without a proof of concept in general, it's hit or miss, right? And I'll give you a quick example. So a roofing company could be slow, storm hits, boom. An event, for example, if You have one bad year, you're never going to have a second year. You're not going to have sponsors, vendors, partners. No one will ever come again. So you have to create the market, the brand, the proof of concept so good to where obviously it gravitates people, and then you have your first event, your second, your third, your fourth. So we were able to perfect that with the event. So then we used that to reverse engineer with iSmart Roofing. Having said that, the marketing and the brand is so important for anything, for any company. Is it attractive? Is it appealing? Is it scalable in the way they're doing their process as well? You know, and then also if you're looking at marketing overall and what their marketing strategies is, well, look, how do they generate their marketing? Is it expensive? Or are they doing canvassing where they have to put a lot of overhead in? Or are they doing, X, Y, and Z? Are they doing Yelp or Yellow Pages or newspapers or billboards? Or, you know, how actually are they converting these leads? What's their conversion rate? What's their cost per click? What's their avatar? What's their lifetime value of a client? There's so many factors. So for me, marketing is probably the number one important thing. And then for me, marketing and sales and brand kind of is like one big tree. Like, it all comes together. So with a bad brand, you can't really market perfectly. With a good brand and good marketing, you're winning at any business.
What's your number one lead source for your home service company?
Our number one lead source for our company is Facebook. Yeah, but then it's different too, right? Because a lot of companies have their specific client. I'll give you a good example as well. So at the beginning, you know, we were seeing competitors with these really attractive ads, like very gravitating in terms of attention. I was like, new roofer, $6,000. And I was like, hey, like, maybe let's try it out. So we tried it out. We're getting tons and tons and tons of leads. But ask me, Steven, were those clients the ideal clients? I say they weren't at all, because you're gravitating towards a cheaper client because you're promoting a cheap service, right? So you have to understand your market. For us, our market is the luxury homeowners, people that have homes over 500,000 plus. We have specific A/B testing that's specifically targeting those homeowners based on language, content, approach, experience, all that good stuff. Now that we're focused on the luxury side of it, what's our age range? Who are we looking for? So our ideal client is from, 30 to 50. There's other companies, for example, that maybe their ideal client is people over 60. Maybe they just do newspaper. Maybe they just do, you have to understand the client though. So for us, it's understanding our avatar, who we want, who's our ideal perfect, our profile, and then how can we get them. And as Gen Z starts coming up, it's going to obviously come more into them as well.
So I'm very familiar with exactly what you're saying. Basically, your initial ads that you did were just like, hey, it's about the pricing, right? Oh, $7,000 for a free new roof. You don't believe me, click to call to action, whatever. It's a way to just attract these ads. I've seen those ads everywhere. It's been that same frame, same kind of copy has been running for years, right? So it's a very familiar hook that works very good. But it's very familiar that attracts, that's my experience too as well, attracts a lot of lower tier customers, right? People that really can't afford the services most of the time. So with that adjustment, how do you, just curious, like how did you change your ads? Or what is it that you're, what are the ads saying now?
Content is number one, obviously. And then the language is the most important one. If you do an ad saying homeowners with homes over 500K plus, you may qualify for our free annual maintenance inspection, our free annual gutter cleaning service, whatever it is. Subconscious, it's not really just the ad, right? So if I have a low income home, and I see an ad that's tailored that way, and language is for a specific client, I will already not even gravitate nor entertain that ad subconsciously. So I just keep scrolling, because it doesn't pertain to me, because I don't associate myself with that class of people. So if the content is very important, right? The language, right? Obviously, if it's something cheap, then it's something cheap. But for us, it's all right. How can we make it attractive, appealing, sexy, convenient, and make it seem like a premium experience for the client? And that's like everyone, right? I mean, you go to Rolls Royce, Ferrari, you go to all these nice restaurant, a nice experience, Cirque du Soleil. It's all an experience, right? You go there primarily for the experience. And it's just a selling factor. So if the homeowner is comparing option A and option B, and option A has a more of a lucrative premium experience, pricing is the same, obviously I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying. You're calling out the target market in your ad, right? That's what you're doing. You're calling out the target market in your ad in the copy, right? And the creative, and you're calling that out, hoping they actually respond. Then you're probably doing open targeting, right? Because with the Android Meta update with Facebook, you can't really do a specific targeting with demographics. It's just open targeting and letting Facebook kind of target the algorithm. And then it takes time, right? It's not gonna come overnight. It's not gonna be in a week or two. It takes time for that algorithm to start kicking in. How long did it take you to start really, really seeing results with Facebook?
Yeah. So for the marketing, we have two agencies. One that does all of our SEO and local service ads, pay-per-click, all that good stuff on the Google side. And then we have one that does our digital marketing with social media. So however they're doing their Facebook, I'm not too sure. I let them have, for me, it's always about, I get people that know more than me. I do know marketing, obviously, as a whole. But when it comes to actually understanding the fine details to things, there's obviously always going to be people better than you at different stuff. If you ask me, Steven, have you put on a roof? I say, no, I don't, right? But I know someone in my team that can put a roof. So same thing with marketing. If I need marketing, go to you as well, right? Be like, hey, man, can you help me get things done, understand things that I don't know? Like, we'll be on the same page, on the same chapter, but you're more advanced than I am. So I always hire and get people much smarter than me, and I think that's what's helped a lot. So to answer your question, I can't really answer it, but obviously they're doing their stuff good on Facebook. It did take maybe three months, but at the beginning, though, we were setting the foundation, so we were able to pump it fast, which was a good thing.
Well, 3 months is not a short time. A lot of people are impatient, so that's why I wanted to ask. So 3 months to start really seeing the results and that. So guys, that's the thing you have to understand, right? Even with paid advertising, it does take some time to start seeing the results. This is something that there's a lot of misinformation. I don't know if you have the answer to this, but PE, right? These guys, when they buy a home service company, typically, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't build their internal marketing team, right? They hire outside vendors they trust, right, for the marketing, right? Like, that's actually a lot of misinformation, because a lot of contractors I talk to have they've had a lot of negative experiences with marketing agencies, and they want to start building their in-house, right? But building in-house, there's a lot of pros and cons, mostly cons, honestly, if you don't know what you're doing. And most of these guys do not know what they're doing. What's your experience with private? What do they say about that? Do they hire in-house, or do they outsource their marketing? How does that work typically?
It really depends on the private equity, the firm's strategy overall. If for example, you're in business for 30 years, there's no reason to get our internal marketing team involved with your company, because clearly what's doing is working. So we want to keep it that way. We just want to merge it with us, right? Now, for obviously a newer company, now being a little bit more realistic, so a newer company coming in, I would say, it's a little bit 50-50. If they have an internal marketing agency that's doing their stuff, that's clearly having the results, then let's merge them in, let's plug and play. However, now you said it yourself, right? I mean, changing agencies is like changing barbers. It's tough, right? I can't trust every barber to cut my hair. I can't trust every marketing agency as well. So it's a little bit of a risk factor. Having said that, I would say in hiring internally, though, as a contractor, I wouldn't advise it. I always say to hire, especially now, I mean, it's 2026. People are doing hybrid jobs, remote jobs. You can hire great, great, great agencies, and they'll do everything. And marketing is all done online. It's not like they have to come in and clock in. Like, what are you going to micromanage a marketing manager here in your company? It doesn't really make sense to that extent for a roofing company. You know, we're talking about a small business here, not a corporate-sized company where, they have their logistics, their HR, their admin, their marketing. Like, that's different, obviously, as a small business owner. You know, you have to keep things simple for yourself. Delegate that stress to an agency that knows exactly what they're doing and they're good at it. Now, if private equity comes in and they have some options, like, hey, maybe this one, or, let's see what they could offer A and B, that's totally different. But if I'm a contractor and I'm really serious about scaling, I'm going to outsource it. Number one, outsourcing, for the most part, I say it would save you money from in-house, because you're paying a rate, hourly salary, whatever. Agencies, for the most part, have their fixed fee or their monthly fee, and then whatever you're putting in on whatever strategies you're using. So that's how I would recommend it. And for my friends who have sold to private equity, all their marketing is outsourced as well. So they don't like act, like they'll have a content creator, someone that handles their social media and does their posts, like silly stuff like that. But actual marketing, they have it outsourced.
Yeah, that's something that happened recently with a client. They wanted to, internal. And typically I told them that's not the right way to do it, right? But yeah, I would, if I were in the position, I would actually, this is why I just talked to Marcus Sheridan from, they ask you, you answer. And he recommends actually hiring a content person at $2.5 million. So if you're at $2.5 million in revenue in your home service industry, it's time to hire like an actual internal content person. And he recommends a videographer, like a videographer, you can start doing content and video stuff. And that's something that he recommends. But he says that he recommends outsourcing everything else, like outsourcing the paid ads, outsourcing the SEO, the website stuff, that's all outsourced, but hiring the internal video person.
I agree 100%. We actually have our social media guy, he'll do the editing and the posting as well. So, and he's more in-house. And that's something that I actually learned. The three things is content is important, content is king, consistency is queen, and attention is everything. So those three factors play a lot on the organic side of marketing, right? Because marketing is like a tree. There's the root and then there's so many branches.
Are you planning on doing, do you do content consistently for your company?
I do actually, yes. So I don't do it personally, but I mean, obviously if I'm in front of the camera, I'll do the footage, but the actual editing and posting, our guy does it. So for the American Dream, we do three posts a day on the American Dream side, the personal brand side, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, I believe as well. And then for the iSmart Roofing, we're doing Facebook and Instagram. And then we do two or three a day, I'm not too sure. But we're always posting stuff, whether it's educational stuff, videos, all sorts of things. And he'll handle all of that.
Nice. So in terms of financial metrics, what do these sophisticated buyers look for that most owners don't track in terms of the financial metrics? What do they look for typically?
Your EBITDA for sure. That's the most important. So I think, in my opinion, the most attractive thing financially, of course, which is the most important buyer would look for, is an EBITDA over 2.5. So if you're able to do 2.5 profit, including after expenses, taxes, depreciation, all that good stuff, you're on a track of being a very, very high candidate to actually sell your business.
Why do you believe that rooms full of owners and decision makers are better than these big conferences that have large, sales focused conferences?
As an owner, there's a lot of conferences too. And I think, in my opinion, though, I'd say events are important. Number one, you meet people, you connect with people, whether it's local, you can meet maybe someone in a property developer, commercial, some, you can always meet business network, and that is phenomenal. Now, as an owner, your time is valuable. Going to sales events is good for your sales teams, but going to an event that's owner-based, decision-maker-based, puts you in a room full of people that are going through the same stuff that you're going through. Maybe that have some that have been there, done that, maybe some that haven't, or maybe some that are doing things a little different. You don't necessarily have to adapt and change your processes, but you can at least have a different understanding and a different idea, which opens up a different avenue eventually for something different. Maybe like, oh wait, this is actually, I like his idea, but I don't want to do it this way, I might do it that way. And being in those events, in my opinion, are important. Like, yeah, you could obviously, YouTube is great, Google is great. However, meeting and connecting and shaking hands is something that technology nor AI will ever beat, because that puts you in the room and it puts you in direct contact with the person that could potentially save your business, or, take your business to the next level. One handshake away, one decision away from a big contract or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Why do you think these events, even if you have no plans on selling, why do you think somebody should attend an event like that, it positions you to sell the business? Why do you think that's important?
Because it will 100% help you scale your business. Even if you have zero interest in selling your business, being in a room will help you understand things and look at things from a whole different perspective at what buyers are looking for, because buyers want profitability, right? And they want good margin. So if they're looking at everything and they're telling you, hey, this is what we dissect, this is what we look at, this is how we help people that we buy from, this is how we say, hey, let's take away X, Y, and Z to help increase margins. And then you're like, wait, maybe I should do that myself, actually. Not for the sake of selling the business, but obviously me as an owner, I want to become more profitable and more scalable. So if this is what they're looking for, obviously it's what's keeping businesses growing and growing. Maybe I should copy and paste and take some ideas from them.
Nice, nice. What unique advantages do a lot of minority and immigrant contractors have that they don't fully leverage?
I would say the fact that we're able to touch a different demographic. That's the transparent truth. If you're Latino, you are able to open a different door. To be quite frank, your client, they see the brand, they see everything, but then also they see you, who they're buying from. And if you're a Latino, number one, if you speak Spanish, that's great. If you speak a different language, you're able to attract a different client and connect with them, because that's sales. Sales is relationships and connection. But then number two, they're going to trust you more, because they're like, oh, like, I know him, like, you know, he's where I'm from, or we're from the same area, or like, you know, same communities, you know, we speak the same language compared to a different person, right? So it's like, again, option A and option B, right? Option B is still great, but then option A, I'm able to connect with the client more and utilize my background and my demographic to my advantage. So it's utilizing your skill set, and there's nothing wrong with utilizing your skill set to your advantage.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. If you're advising a contractor doing 3 to 5 minutes a day, what would you tell them that to focus on the next 36 months if they want maximum, like, you know, sell acquisitions?
If a company is doing 3 to 5 million, I would say they need to break down their finances in terms of what they're bringing in. Maybe hire a fractional CFO or a CFO. I think that's the main component there that really takes you to that next level, because they break down everything from cost of material, supply, your shingles, your nails. You know, have you set up a standardized contract with your suppliers to make sure that you have a set price for everything, and you're not, kind of getting screwed up in the back end whenever you do a change order, or, you know, they say it's X amount, but then it comes out to Y. Looking at your cost, your clients, what you're doing. Are you doing insurance, retail? Okay, what exact, not, oh, I'm doing 50-50. No, like, what exact, like, I'm doing a 47.5% insurance, of 52.5% retail, and then in that retail market, you know, we're doing residential, commercial, what are we doing, how many clients are we getting, where's our area, where's our target, our geo target areas, how can we keep expanding within that same area or look at different areas. And as you start to nitpick and fine tune your cost, your overhead, your profits, your pricing strategies, then you're going to start to really climb up the ladder more and more and more, because now you're actually looking at it from a whole different perspective. And that's why they say a really important thing is getting a fractional CFO or a CFO.
Awesome, awesome. Steven, where do people find you?
And anywhere. Instagram is Steven_Martinez, Facebook Steven Martinez. If they want to follow the American Dream, AmericanDreamEvent.com, they're able to find all the information. We have our upcoming event June 18th and 19th, 2026 in Houston. It's going to be a really great event. We have some pretty big surprises, so we're super excited to announce them soon. So just tentatively waiting to be announced. But yeah, but all over social media.
I'm excited to be at the event. I want to thank you for your time. It came out great, man. Thanks for your time. So I'm going to put the link to the show notes there, so you guys can see it on the link. So make sure to check out Steven's event. Anybody in the home service space that wants to sell their business, wants to talk to PE, meet a lot of PE people. And even if you have no intention of selling, it's good to build your business in that manner, because you're building an asset. That's it, that you can actually eventually sell or just pass it down to your family or whatever. Something that's very valuable, right? So, Steven, man, thank you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to ContractorMarketingPros.net and book your free strategy call.